WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Wow, it's warm and 83 degrees. What am I doing here in studio? I should be at home, sitting on the deck, frying up a few dogs and hamburgers. Larry should be bringing us some homebrew from good. Mayflower.
That sounds good.
But no, we are here to...
Make sure the air conditioning's working.
That's one of the reasons, and also the fan. And, of course, our mission as our station owner, Edward Perry, who is also the host of the Good, the Bad, and the Really, Really Stupid that you can hear weekdays. At around, what, 7:40, 7:45 a.m.?
Until 7:50.
Until 7:50, until he impedes on Malcolm Alter's traffic report. It's to pass around the big megaphone in a form, folks here on the South Shore. And so that's what this very program tries to do. And, of course, the voices. Larry Nelson, who has, he's your midday guy from...
I'm back on the bike again.
Back on the bike again.
See, here I am.
10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can hear him weekdays. We have a fantastic show for you lined up. We're going to start things off with State Representative Joan Moschino. She's checking in. So we like to do the State House report. She'll be checking in. She's probably out and about up at the State House. She's not on her back porch or on her deck like we would like to,
she's
Larry.
She's probably thinking about it.
She's probably thinking about it like I am, and also Christine James, who's also working real hard in the news department, in the news booth. So other than Joan Moschino, we have a state rep candidate. You actually heard, I think, Kathy Lenatra, who is running
this
for...
This afternoon she stopped in.
Yeah. She is running for the state rep seat, the Tom Coulter's open seat. Well, we have one of the Republicans who is also vying for that. Summer Schmeling is going to be joining us. She's not only the chairwoman of the town's elementary school committee, but also the vice chairwoman of the Halifax Republican Town Committee. She'll be in studio joining us and chatting about why she is running for state rep. That's the first hour. Second hour of this fine program. We can talk a little Brockton Rocks, and oddly enough, funny that Larry's here. Now, I'm not sure, Larry, are you going to be
Same as last year, yeah.
We're going to be eating
together over there.
We're going to eat hot dogs and Cracker Jacks. And
see some baseball.
And pretend to see some baseball.
I don't know. I'm going to watch it.
You're going to watch it. Of course, I'm going to be chatting with folks. We're trying to line up a couple of things. We might have the mayor. I don't know if you heard about this firefighter who's a golfer. We're trying to see if we can get him as well and to speak to some other folks, maybe Todd Marlin from the Brockton Rocks. He's the general manager. 7 o'clock, we're going to tease an event that they got going on tomorrow night and also tease our broadcast from Campanelli Stadium in downtown Brockton, so stay tuned for that. And then, I mentioned the good, the bad, and the really, really stupid. Well, when Edward isn't here, and Edward is off out and about, his fill-in, Bob Parkus, WATD's Bob Parkus, is going to be joining me at around 7:20, and he has a few words to tell
me.
A few words to share with me.
Just a few.
We went.
How long's the segment?
Trust me, it was hard to stop him.
I bet.
When I was setting up the idea with him, so I'm only envisioning when we do talk with him. He wants to talk a little bit about North Korea.
Okay.
Give us some history.
I'm interested now.
And then Larry is somebody who likes cameras and...
Oh, yeah, cameras.
Photojournalism. Well, we have Brian Skerry. Do you know who he is?
The name sounds familiar, but it's not ringing a bell.
Well, he is somebody who is with National Geographic. This is a gentleman who has won a very prestigious award, 11 times the Wildlife Photographer of the Year competition. He specializes in marine wildlife and underwater environments. And we're going to talk with him about his exciting new book. Of course, this is just right around the corner from Shark Week. But this is the ultimate book on sharks. So we're going to talk with him at around 7:40. And we're cruising right into the WATD Traffic Center, being sponsored on this end by Brennan's Smoke Shop online. At BrennansSmokeShopMA.com with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now Pope's Island, New Bedford. And trying to get us home safely is the one and only George Brown. How's it looking out there?
Well, Kevin, it's still heavy and slow leaving the city. Southbound delays begin coming out of the tunnel. Stay heavy right down to a right lane breakdown by Granite Avenue. That's not helping things. Once you get past there, it stays slow heading down to the split. Northbound is heavy and slow. Furnacebrook Parkway up past Neponset Circle. Then you're jammed again. Mass Ave into the tunnel. Route 3 southbound is slow coming off the expressway down past Union Street. Then it breaks free the rest of the way. Northbound on Route 3 getting word of a crash now in Kingston just after 3A. Shelter pets are amazing pets, and the only way to find out how truly amazing they are is to meet one. You can visit the shelterpetproject.org today to adopt. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm George Brown, the WATD Traffic Center.
Big Poppy David Ortiz himself will be at Brennan's Smoke Shop in Rainham Tuesday, June 19th from 5 to 7 p.m. selling signed boxes of his Big Poppy cigars. Meet the man himself at this very limited opportunity. Tuesday, June 19th from 5 to 7 p.m. Brennan's Smoke Shop, Rainham. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store.
Hey! This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
8675309, I dare you to call it. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD World Wide Web, 959WATD.com. Of course, that's where you can go to the homepage, scroll down and click on the Monday Night Talk banner, and you'll find all of our latest and greatest podcasts. The one that we did a couple of weeks ago with Marion Ross, Mrs. C, Mrs. Cunningham, and other great podcasts that we have.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey.
It was a good interview. It was a very good interview with her. Of course, part of the way through, Ben had to call her back. Because we weren't getting a good signal.
Did the phone company do their phone magic to unmagic again?
They did. He had to drop two quarters into the slot first in order for that to happen.
That's what Ed told me to do. The phone lines came back up, so that's a good thing.
Awesome. And that means that our very first guest is awaiting us to say hello to her. And we have a state representative representing the 3rd Plymouth District, Representative Joan Moschino. Representative, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Oh, thank you so much, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I have to ask you, do you not wish that you could be at home on your back deck grilling up some steaks or some chicken or enjoying the birds and the bird feeder? What?
Oh, that would be actually really lovely. Although, down here in Hull, you can see that there's some sort of storm coming in. So I think the traffic that you were reporting is going to get even slower pretty soon. And I'm very glad that I took the ferry back from the city today.
Excellent. Well, so while we have you here, we get a chance to chat with you. This is our State House report, our opportunity to speak with the folks who represent us up at the State House, whether it's a constitutional officer or someone from the Senate, the House representatives. Sad news, and I've asked a lot of colleagues, those of Jim Cantwell and, of course, yeah, Tom Coulter. And I know Jimmy Cantwell was kind of a guy who kind of helped mentor you and has been kind of like a guide for your first term.
Oh, my gosh. He has been so wonderful. He was very welcoming. You know, he'd been in the House for, you know, long enough. He just really knew his way around and how everything worked. And just by his own sort of personality and nature, he's just very easy to work with, and you know, I never feel like he's someone who gives advice, but he's there, always encouraging and ready to give it when you ask for it. And he just, I don't know, he just put his arm around my shoulder and was really wonderful, guiding me and trying to navigate as I got started, and really helped me get my feet under me. And I feel like I'm off and running thanks to Jim, and I miss him so much. He's a lot of fun to work with. I really miss him now.
Well, now you have another member of that infamous law firm, Cutler, Coulter, and Cantwell. Tom Coulter, of course, now the new town administrator in Kingston.
Yeah, it was a lot of people trading up. So I'm very excited for Tom. And, you know, he was another one who, you know, just, he's like, hey, kid, you know, anything you need, whatever you need, I'm here to help. And so it was really great to get to know him and to have him as a colleague. And I swear to God, though, if Josh Cutler decides to resign and leave, I'm going to start to take it personally. But, no, they're a wonderful, wonderful delegation. And really, the Senate district, sort of from Jamie Murphy and Bruce Harris right down to Tom Coulter, they were very welcoming. And they're a really good bunch of guys doing a lot of hard work, doing a lot of good for the state. And they've been a lot of fun to work with. So, but always good to have change, and we're excited for Jim. Now he'll be elevating all of our South Shore issues at the federal level, working with Senator Markey as his statewide director. So it's actually a great opportunity for him, and it's a wonderful opportunity for us to leverage that relationship. So it's good for us.
Let's talk a little bit about pending legislation, an environmental bond bill that is in the works. For folks who may or may not know, tell us a little bit about this and how your district is going to benefit from this particular bill and other districts that are similar to it.
This is actually really important for the South Shore and really any of the coastal communities in particular, but statewide as well. If you remember the three big storms that hit us, in Scituate in particular, that hit us so hard, this winter, and Governor Baker came down and stood, and he toured the scene. And if you'll remember, he announced the environmental bond bill right from Scituate in front of the seawall. And what it does is it just makes those investments that are so critical for our district, really thinking about the coastal infrastructure, the seawall, but also, you know, the vulnerability assessment and the planning and, you know, the initiatives that we need to really be resilient. So it's not just throwing money after a problem. It's really thinking ahead long term to really protecting our community, preserving the nature of our community and our businesses. And it's really actually going to be pretty important for us. The House, it's made its way through the House, and now it's over at the Senate. And I'm hopeful that we've improved it as well. In fact, one piece that I was able to get in there is almost like a pilot program, if you will, for Hingham, Hull, Cohasset, and Scituate to do some of the vulnerability assessments and planning regionally. So they've put aside an authorization of $500,000 for our communities, but then they've also set aside $6 million so that other communities can take what we do and almost roll it out like a pilot program. So that was really exciting, especially as a freshman, to put something forward like that that really resonated with other members and is now moving forward through the Senate. So, yeah, it's exciting stuff. It's important stuff for our district.
And, you know, I know that when you were campaigning, one of the things that you talked about, one of your concerns was the rising seas, and that's something that still is very prevalent. A lot of folks are paying attention as to what's happening with our polar ice caps and how they're quickly melting. Mm-hmm. And who knows what's going to happen when it comes to rising seas, when it comes to coastal protection, especially when we're talking about, like, seawalls.
Oh, exactly. And I think people really, you know, when we talk about these things, those of us that live along the shorelines understand the intensity and the frequency of the storms, and that, you know, the sea level rise and the storm surges, you know, have been increasing over time. But to get those three big storms right in a row and to really see the inundation coming from different directions and to see it working in a way that even people like myself who've grown up here and lived here all my life hadn't seen before. I think it really woke a lot of people up to what it means to say sea level rise and coastal flooding. I hope everyone understands is that the coastline is not the canary in the coal mine, but it's the place where you see it the most dramatically because that's where the storm action is, right? That's where the wave action is. That's where the intense winds and the storm surges. But inland communities should be worrying about, you know, extreme temperatures as well. They should be worrying about, you know, these deluge rains and these storm events just as much as we should. So even though the focus has been here and, you know, there's money for seawalls, there's money for planning, for Department of Conservation Recreation, inland communities should be thinking about this just as much as we, as the rest of us. And so hopefully, I think everyone saw that from our past winter. So we'll see.
Okay, we're speaking with the State Representative Joan Moschino. She is our guest for this first segment. Well, we're awaiting what's going to happen with the fiscal 19 budget. Your thoughts on this year's process and what we should expect in regards to financial aid. That's kind of big when it comes to local communities and districts.
Oh, it's really important for especially down on the South Shore. We have a lot of smaller communities. Local aid becomes really important. So obviously this is my second budget, but a new chairman, and so I thought it was a very thoughtful process both times, and I was really pleased with the dialogue I was able to have with, you know, House Ways and Means, and just getting to know the district. They want to know about the district and what our needs are. Obviously, I'm a freshman, so, you know, I don't get that much in terms of the earmarks, and think we were able to get one, you know, small regional project that will be housed in Cohasset for animal control, but it's important, and it's something that helps the communities in my immediate district. But I think the big thing for me is that this budget on the House side was about people, it was about investing in services, it was about local aid to our communities. And so I was actually very pleased with the numbers that came out. Would have liked to have seen a little bit more around our local libraries, but, you know, we really stuck with our communities for Chapter 70, which is the education money. We stuck with our communities around Chapter 90, which is the roadway money, and then the unrestricted local aid as well. And so you see the House and the Senate really sticking there and investing in our local communities, which is really just so important right now.
So what do you feel you have been able to glean from these 2 years? Again, we're you're back on the horse this summer into yes. into November, and you know you're getting word out there as to what you're doing as a candidate for re-election. What do you feel are some of the things that you've been able to learn as a freshman legislator?
Well, you know, it's interesting to see the process and get to know the inside of the building and how everything works and learn the rules, but for me, I haven't really spent that much time up at the State House. For me, it's really been more about being in the district and really setting up the office hours and getting to know the people in the district and really helping individuals, which is always very gratifying to just to be there as a public servant and to help people. From that perspective, you know, really learning all the state agencies and the ebb and the flow of it and helping people navigate, that's actually been a fun puzzle to figure out. Some of our state agencies, you know, defy a little logic every once in a while, but we do help people get those handicap placards. But being in the building, there's a lot of people who are working. They're very smart. They're working on a lot of important issues. And to be part of some of the policy initiatives, I've enjoyed that piece quite a lot. I was very lucky to get onto some terrific committees, telecommunication, utility, energy. I actually asked to be to be appointed there. And it's positioned me to be influential on some of the policy issues that really are important to us. And in fact, you know, to be able to be on the inside and advocating for an increase in things like the renewable portfolio standards, which means for green energy and renewables and raising the solar net metering cap, and to just to be positioned to advocate for things like that, that's been tremendously rewarding as well. And I've enjoyed, I'm not sure what I thought when I first got elected. I'm not sure what I expected, but it's definitely exciting. It's definitely interesting. I've enjoyed the work tremendously. I've had a ball. You all, thank you to all of the residents in my district. You gave me my dream job, and I'm very excited to run for re-election. And I would say to the people running in the open seats, it's very rewarding work, and I'll be excited to see who the voters give me to work with moving forward. So, yeah, all good stuff, Kevin, all good stuff.
You had mentioned the telecommunications committee. Is that the same one that deals with, like, cable issues, like to be able to have HD,
yes,
if we want it? Because that's the one thing that I know a lot of the access centers are dealing with, is they want to be able to provide HD quality programming. But right now they're kind of stuck with what Comcast, Verizon, whatever the provider is. And I think also the other one is being able to be recognized when you're flipping through your channels and have a program guide. Is that anything that you've been dealing with in that committee?
Yes. Oh, my gosh, yes. And in fact, in my district, the town of Hingham, Harbor Media is what they're calling it now, has been very proactive with me, educating me on those issues about why it's so important that we really start switching over everything. I didn't realize everything is recorded in HD anyway, all mm-hmm. of their equipment, everything, and it's just a natural fit to just move right over into that. So that has been something that's been discussed in front of our committee quite a lot, and there's still some real advocacy that really needs to be done on that. The cable companies have been really resisting it. But it was great to, you know, it's a nice example of, you know, really people reaching out on local issues, educating someone like myself, who I would have no reason to know anything about that, and to partner with me to start to move some of these ideas forward to make our community better. So, yeah, it's been exciting, but there's still, yeah, it's dealing with the cable company is not easy. So, but we're working on it, and we're really trying to get them to start to do it. And I know that the town of Hingham has made some headway in that regard, and it's just a matter of time to just keep pushing, right? Polite, professional, persistent. So that's what we're doing.
Well, as long as we know that we at least have the representative support, and she'll spread the word with other representatives and any of your colleagues over in the Senate, that would be fantastic to be able to get some movement on that. We got just about a minute or two left. Anything, any ground we haven't covered? Do you want to take a minute to kind of talk about for a couple of minutes with the listeners who are tuned in?
Things are going well. I mean, I think the big thing is we're coming up on the end of session, and so there's just so much activity building up at the State House. Right in front of us now for consideration is the health care bill,
mm-hmm.
Which really looks like it's going to be very effective on cost containment and supporting some of the initiatives around our community health centers. And so I think that's going to be really important, and I'm looking forward to hearing the debate and the discussion as that moves forward. But we've only got, I think, like 7 weeks left of session, and it's really, everything's ramping up, and it's very exciting. So if there are things that you're, you know, from at least from my district, if you're interested in or you're aware of, please stay in touch with me and keep me up to date on the things you're hearing and the things that are important to you, because it's a swirl up here, and it's exciting, but you can't keep track of everything. So you definitely need people to partner with me and to, you know, to work closely to move important things forward. So it's all going well, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be on and just to chat about stuff like this with you, Kevin. This is terrific.
And we're looking forward to the next time you and your husband, John, are in studio. Maybe you can bring Colette, your new aide. And
I know.
We can have a party for 20 minutes.
Oh, that would be awesome. I know Ryan actually left on June 1st.
Oh.
He wants to be a photojournalist. He's going to go speak truth to power. So he's taken off to pursue other opportunities. But he did a great job transitioning, and we have a wonderful new legislative aide. Her name is Colette Medulla. So when you call our office, be sure to say welcome to her. She's really smart and doing a great job already. So, yeah, all good.
Right, and if you heard it here, make sure you tell Colette that you heard her name on the radio, and so she'll she'll really know that she's popular.
That's right.
Representative, awesome. We want to thank you. Enjoy the great weather, and we look forward to talking to you in the next couple of weeks and months ahead.
Sounds great. Have a wonderful night, Kevin. Thank you so much.
You got it. There she is, State Representative Joan Moschino, our guest, and what we're going to do is we're going to step aside for just a moment, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about summer. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
The Euro Motor Car, introduced 1977, proudly displayed in shopping malls across America. At $4,000, it was the cheapest new car you could buy, and the Euro exceeded all expectations of cheapness. It would not start, it would not go, the windows would not open. Enter Tony. Fix it again, Tony. He got his Yugo to start. He got his Yugo to go. In fact, the Yugo replaced all his hobbies, except one, kayaking. Pop the kayak in the back hatch, hit a bump, rear window whacks the bow, the window pops out unbroken. The Yugo, tough as glass.
I'm Peter from Tiny & Sons Glass in Pembroke. We've never had to replace a windshield in a Yugo, but for all you non-Yugo drivers out there, we do replace your windshields. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Be sure to tune in hour number two as we'll speak with, hopefully, Boston Bruins alumni Bruce Crowder and photojournalist Brian Skerry. Talk about his new book. But first, we have somebody who is hoping you will consider her come September 4th.
Mm-hmm.
We have Summer Schmeling.
Oh, you said it right.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I practiced in the mirror for about an hour. It was real tough. She is a state representative candidate for the 12th Plymouth District.
Correct.
So, now, what's even cooler, she was actually part of a comprehensive article that was in the Globe last week, or is the week before, June 8th?
10th. Or, yeah, 8th. That sounds right.
It says here June 8th.
Okay, 8th. I think 10th it was in print, on 8th it was online.
Actually, you know what? You're correct.
Okay.
You are correct, because online it was the 8th, and then it printed 2 days later. And this is something that was a mandatory. Should Massachusetts eliminate tuition and mandatory fees for in-state students? It's public colleges and universities. We'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
But you wear more hats than just somebody who's running for state representative. What else do you do?
I do. So I am chairwoman of the Halifax Elementary School Committee. I am vice chair of the Republican Town Committee.
Okay.
I'm a mother of three children.
God bless you.
So that takes a lot of my time. They play an immense amount of sports, the older two. And my youngest is about a year and a half, so he keeps me on my toes.
But that's a good thing.
Yes.
That is a good thing. So what are the sports that the two oldest play?
Well, my oldest is 13, and she's taller than me, so she's about 6 feet.
Wow.
And she plays a lot of basketball year-round.
Okay.
My son is 9, and he also plays basketball, so he's playing on 2 basketball teams this summer, and he's playing on the All-Star baseball team.
Wow.
They get all of that not from me.
Okay. But at least they're active.
Yes, very.
They're not stuck in the house.
No.
Playing video games, good.
My son would love to play Fortnite all day, all night, but not happening.
Out of the house. So what was the interest in wanting, you're somebody who serves on a school committee, what was the interest in saying, I want to be a state representative, I want to move up to the next level?
Yeah, so when I moved to Halifax, I started on the finance committee because taxes are really high, and I loved the community I moved into, and I wanted to be a part of it. Politics is something that's just innately in my blood and I'm passionate about. When I was 4, my dad asked me what I wanted to be when I grow up, and I said the first woman president of the United States of America. So I figured, I know I might as well follow that a little bit. So being on the finance committee, I then ran for school committee and won. Couple reasons I did that. One, because more than half of our town budget is consumed by the schools. So that was a big driver. And
do you know the percentage? Because it varies in
communities.
I believe
it's about 52%.
Oh, okay.
So, but more than half. So that's a large chunk of it between Silver Lake and Halifax. So then I ran for school committee, and at the time, Common Core was beginning to be rolled out, and I was very strongly against that. And so I wanted to be part of that conversation at the table as well. And so I won. I completed a term, so I sat for a year, ran again, served for 3 years, became chair, served as chair the last 3 years, and just won re-election this past
spring.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so I really, in talking to people, even on the school committee, ran into a lot of parents who didn't feel like they had a voice and didn't feel like anybody was listening to them. And I have a strong personality, so I feel like now I'm the kind of person that can sort of be that for them, their voice, and listen and be their ears. So I'm ready to take it to the next level.
What are your concerns in regards to how our state spends money, how we spend money as a culture? And this leads me into the article that you were a part of, because there's some intriguing things that you said in the article. And some of it, it's the hammer hitting the nail right on the head.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about how we spend money as a commonwealth, as a community? I'm sure you've attended your share of being on the school committee. I'm sure you've sat through your share of town meetings and were like, oh, my God.
Yes, many town meetings, yes. I'm a big believer in education. I mean, I think our spending money on education, I don't have a problem with at all. So I understand that, you know, Massachusetts has some of the highest standards in the nation, if not the highest in the nation. And part of that is because we funnel a lot of money into education and public education. And I have no issue with that. There's frivolous spending, obviously, on things that I don't necessarily agree with, redecorating people's offices, and, you know, I'm not a huge
proponent. Wait, sounds like a recent administration.
Past administration.
Yep, yep.
You know, I think we spend a lot of money on social programs that are not necessarily effective. One of which is dealing with the opioid issue. There's different schools of thought on how we should approach that. And it appears, from at least what I understand, that privately funded programs, although they may be more expensive from the jump, have a lot higher success rate. So for us as a state to keep funneling money into a program that's not effective and not working and just recycling people through it just to come back into it is not something I'm a fan of. It needs to be looked at.
So as I teased a couple of minutes ago, that you were part of an article that was in the Boston Globe, should Massachusetts eliminate tuition and mandatory fees for in-state students at public colleges and universities? And it was a yes or no. And there was a Cohasset resident who is a political director of the South Shore Young Democrats, Vienna Tiergiacomo. I hope I said your name right, Vienna. I hope I did. She was for yes. She says yes. There's more details, but she supports it. You, on the other hand, one of your phrases, or actually, you start out by saying, we have all heard the phrase, nothing in life is free. It's very true.
Yeah.
It's very true. And you kind of go into, you know, talking about, you know, how do you pay for this? A lot of people don't think about it. They want to be able to give things away. But how do you pay for it? How do you sustain it?
Well, it sounds good, right? Like everything.
Looks good on
everybody
paper.
Wants something for free. Yeah, and I feel like that's the mentality of a lot of people who want social programs that are quote unquote free, you know, and people have had that argument about health insurance. And I take a similar position when it comes to college tuition. First of all, I don't think everyone should go to college. It's not for everybody. It's a decision you make. And I don't necessarily think it's one you should be making when you're 18 either. Part of that is because I didn't go when I was 18. I was in my 20s when I decided to go. And I think if I went when I was 18, I would have gone for something very different than what I ended up going for, because I worked in a restaurant my whole life. And even when I started college at 20-something, I was going to go for hotel restaurant management. A year into it, I switched my major to molecular biology and went that route instead. And had no, in fact, I started in nutrition and then switched to biology. So, and I was in my 20s. I just don't think that not every 18-year-old. There are some very driven 18-year-olds that know exactly what they want to be when they grow up. But not all of us are that fortunate. And I also think that trade schools are getting pushed by the wayside. And we need plumbers and electricians and garbage men and fishermen.
Wait, you mean there's a course to be a garbage man at the trade? No, but you're right, though. It's just trade schools like the South Shore of OTEC up in Hanover does a fantastic job.
Of course.
And it's one of those ones that they just had their graduation. And I think it's something that's being looked at again as something that, again, not everybody needs to go to college. And, you know, you are very, very much an open book here. And you said it in so many words, but you said here, just quoting from the article, speaking from personal experience, I was not ready for college right out of high school. One could argue this holds true for most young adults. How many of us knew exactly what profession we wanted entering at the age of 18? Very true. It's very true. But a lot of parents want to push their children and make sure that they are ready to set foot into
but
a career.
What,
but I'm just saying is a lot of parents these days push their kids towards, you got to know what you want to do, be ready young. But not everybody matures at the same rate.
Right.
How many
kids do you know? How many 23 year olds, you know, that have a degree in a liberal art and don't know what to do with it or can't get a job and end up working at Starbucks? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but now you're $90,000 in debt and you're waiting tables.
Right. And what's even worse is, what does a lot of that money matriculate to? Usually the administration.
Well, yes, which is another point I made, is there's very high administrative overhead in a lot of these colleges and universities. And
look at how much you pay for a book.
It's insanity.
And the book isn't even, sometimes the book doesn't last beyond two terms because,
new edition,
they changed four pages. And of course, those four pages are going to cost you an extra $50.
And you can't just buy the online version.
No.
You have to buy the whole thing. It's just, I encourage everybody to write the essays to earn scholarships. Let me tell you, I actually earned a couple of scholarships during my time in college, partly because nobody else applied for them. It's pretty incredible. The money is there if people are willing to do the work to go and find it. You know? And I also
that's
think
the definition of free money right there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Earn it.
Let's take a moment. What are some of the issues that you're going to look to tackle as you're out and about on the campaign trail? Issues that you want to tackle, issues that you're hearing from residents in the district?
So, issues that I want to tackle certainly is the opioid crisis. And I understand that this is something that's on everyone's radar. And I really, truly believe that if all of our great minds can come together, that we can tackle this issue. And by that, I mean the left, the right, everybody. Because we all have children, family members, friends.
A stake in this.
A stake in this. This is our community. We live here. I mean, there are dirty needles on the playgrounds. It's just insane. And I lost a family member a few months ago to an overdose, and she left behind two children. And it's really sad. And part of it, I believe, is our broken rehabilitation. The detox is not long enough. There's no tools for these people when they want to get clean and they go back out into the street. They just use again because they don't know what to do. And it's sad. So, I mean, that needs to be tackled, number one. On the other complete opposite end of that is I believe that we need full cooperation with federal law enforcement, because these drugs are hitting our streets and they're coming from overseas. They're coming from outside of our country. I mean, pharmaceutical is a huge issue also. And by that, I mean people who obtain illegal prescription drugs. I mean, that's where a lot of these problems stem from. And so, I mean, I'm in full support of allowing our law enforcement to arrest and our system, quote unquote, to prosecute these traffickers to the highest degree, because we need to clean up the streets. And it ranges on both ends of the spectrum, from the people who bring it here to the people who are using it. So that's a big issue for me. I'd say the biggest issue I hear from people aside from that one is taxes. Taxes are very high in the state, but, you know, we get what we pay for. We have top-notch education. We are a pretty clean state for the most part, like in terms of our environment, so that's a good thing. But our property taxes, at least in my district, are extraordinarily high, very high. And a lot of that is due to the fact that it rests on the back of the residents. We don't have a lot of commercial tax base. And there's been studies that have been done and ways to try to increase commercial revenue. And it's difficult because my district is kind of funny. Like Halifax, Plimpton are sort of off the beaten path a little bit. So mm-hmm. There's not really highway access. So that's an issue. But any way we can keep the property taxes at bay and find a way to bring more revenue to our communities would be fantastic. And a lot of my friends on the right might disagree with me, but I think one of the ways might be the pot issue. I mean, in our town in Halifax, we are allowing for
zoning for retail shops?
Yeah, not retail. We've zoned for
cultivation
and okay. Processing, not distribution. Okay. But that's going to, according to our, you know, town administration, that's going to ease our local tax burden, and that's important to a lot of families that are struggling.
What do you feel that if you were a representative, you were representing the 12th Plymouth District, mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you feel you'd be able to bring home to your district in regards to whether it's finances, whether it's earmarks for certain projects? Maybe there are projects that you're aware of that you'd like to go out and be able to help secure funding. Maybe not in your freshman term, not during your freshman term, but during your time in office.
I mean, I have a lot to learn, clearly. I know being on the school committee, there's a bill right now to modernize the foundation budget. So that's definitely something I would support. And a lot of people, their eyes glaze over when I start talking about Chapter 70 funding. But I mean, that's part of why there's such a huge burden on our schools and on our taxes, is because we aren't being compensated appropriately, for lack of a better word, from the state. We have higher than what we are being granted in terms of our special education budget. So, I mean,
how about unfunded mandates? What could a legislator do? What could a group of legislators do when it comes to mandates that are put forth on communities? You need to do this, but yet there's no state aid to help with those mandates. Give me your thoughts on that.
Well, that was part of my issue with Common Core, actually. And again, with education, that's where I like honed in big time, is part of Common Core is this bundle of unfunded mandates. And it drowns our school budget, and it doesn't allow us to pay our teachers. It's a fight every time we have negotiations for contracts. And you know, and it's like we just don't have the money because we are obligated to pay X, Y, and Z. We're obligated to pay for all of this special ed tuition and transportation, and we have out-of-district vocational, and, you know, we are mandated to pay all of that. And by all means, we want to pay all of that because we want to help every child and excel and learn in any way that we can. But we need to what's the word I'm looking for? We need to really send a strong message to the legislature that we need help there, especially in our small towns. And some of the bigger cities get that help, but we are kind of forgotten in my district.
Okay. We got just about 2 or 3 minutes left. Something I haven't asked you, but you want to take a couple of moments to kind of at least bend the ear of our listener right now and say, hey, this is why you're going to remember me September 4th.
Well, for one, I am not a politician, and I'm not going to pretend to be. I'm pretty real and a straight shooter. You ask me a question, you're going to get an answer.
That's happened so far tonight, yep.
That's good. If I don't have the answer, I'm going to tell you I don't have the answer, and I'm going to do my best to surround myself with the great minds that can help me reach a conclusion that I can't reach on my own. Working in science for years has helped me really drive home the importance of collaboration. And, you know, I feel like there's some arrogance that comes along with politicians, and I really want to strive not to have that. And I'll do my best not to be like that. And I'm not afraid to ask. And I think that I have the problem-solving skills needed to sort through some of this mess that we have and find the solution.
You possess the critical thinking. Is that what you're saying?
I do. Okay. Where have you read that before?
It's just a rumor. If folks want to find out more about you, your campaign, they want to get involved, how can they do that?
So I have a website. It's summer4rep.com. So summerforrep.com. There's a link to my Facebook on there, link to my email. Please, when I'm door knocking, I tell people all the time, please reach out to me. I'm all ears. Tell me your concerns in the district. Ask me a question. I'm running a fun campaign. I bring my little guy out with me door knocking. You know, we have a good time. Can I mention my fundraiser coming
please
up?
Do. Yep.
We have a fundraiser coming up July 29th at the Upland Club in Plimpton. I originally was going to do a pig roast because I'm a big fan, and then a local farmer in Halifax told me he was going to donate the leg of his cow that he is slaughtering in July, so we're going to have that instead.
Nice.
All about keeping it local.
There you go.
So, yeah, and that'll be more information on my website about that, and please, I'm a very approachable person, so please reach out.
Summer, I want to thank you for coming in, talking
you
about your campaign, and I'm sure there's going to be a political forum somewhere around here, and so yourself and your opponent will be part of the conversation as
great.
Some of the others. So we wish you the best of luck on the campaign trail. We are going to step aside. That concludes the first hour of Monday Night Talk. I know. I'm sad, too. But the second hour is on deck here. Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
Hi, I'm Miss Melissa from the Pembroke Public Library. To start our summer reading program this year, we will be hosting a Making Music workshop on June 25th at 1:30 for all ages 5 to 17. Everyone will upcycle to create their own instrument. Tickets are free but limited. Visit us at 142 Center Street in Pembroke, call at 781-293-6771, or check our website at pembrokepubliclibrary.org. See you soon.
This is Sheriff Joe McDonald. Spring is finally here, but that also means a new round of telephone scammers looking to steal your money are back as well. Recently, these scammers have been calling local residents, pretending to be from the Sheriff's Department, local police, or even the Internal Revenue Service, with dire threats that someone is coming to arrest you. If you should be one of the unfortunate targets of these scams, there is only one thing you can do to make sure you're not a victim. Hang up. I promise no one from any law enforcement or government agency is calling to threaten you with arrest, looking for money, credit card, or personal information. Whether they ask for a few dollars or just personal facts and figures, there's a good chance someone is trying to take advantage of you. Don't fall for it. Always feel free to call the police if you have questions or want to report suspicious activity. This spring and always, I urge you not to fall victim to these badgering bandits. Instead, just hang up. Thank you.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right. Hour number two of Monday Night Talk. And this next segment, a little bit of a teaser, because next week, of course, we are going to be broadcasting live from Campanelli Stadium. That'll be next Monday night. But hey, if you're into local baseball, you definitely want to check out a Brockton Rocks game, especially tomorrow night. They actually, when it comes to local baseball, when it comes to, it may not be the Boston Red Sox, but some of the fun things that they do are phenomenal. Like, example, tomorrow night, not only is it two for Tuesday, I guess you get two hot dogs and you get two tickets, but they have fun events. And tomorrow night, if you're a hockey fan, you'll have a chance to meet the one and only Boston Bruin himself, Bruce Crowder, who's actually joining us on the line. Bruce, welcome to Monday Night Talk. Do we still have
Good
Bruce?
Good to be here.
Hey, so talk to us a little bit about being a part of this event over at the Brockton Rocks. Folks who may not know you, you and your brother Keith, playing for the Boston Bruins back in the 80s. Keith, of course, I'm sure he's somewhere around these days, yeah?
Yeah, Keith actually, he moved back home to Canada when he was finished up. His wife is from Canada, and I actually married a girl from Concord, New Hampshire from my UNH days, and so I ended up sticking around, which I love New England, and I've pretty much been a part of it since 75 when I first came out this way. So, but yeah, this event was, they had reached out to some people with the Bruin alumni, and they asked if they could get alumni to go down. They were kind of looking for somebody with a UMass
background.
And I mean, my background is I actually coached at UMass Lowell for 6 years. So,
right.
And my son graduated from UMass. So I said, that's as close as you're going to get with me.
And, you know, it's funny you mentioned UMass Lowell and how well, I mean, look at this college and how well they've done when it comes to skating. A lot of people think of Boston University and Boston College, but hey, UMass Lowell isn't that bad either.
No, they hired a guy named Norm Bazin, who was a young man that played for me back when I coached there, and he's done a phenomenal job winning Hockey East a few times, and he's one of his goaltenders was played for the Winnipeg Jets, and he's a finalist for the Vezina Trophy in the NHL this year. So they've been able to attract some pretty good athletes there at UMass Lowell. They've done a nice job with the Saugus Arena up there, and yeah, I mean it's been a great couple of years up there.
Talk to us about now. You probably still skate. You probably still play with the alumni. I know the alumni play a lot of games all over, not only locally here, but usually regionally as well, up in Canada and other alumni teams as well. Are you a part of that?
Yes, I've been involved ever since I got out of coaching back 12 years ago. I mean, I got involved, and it's been. I mean, I tell everybody it's the closest thing you're going to get to the senior tour,
mm-hmm.
In golf kind of thing. But you know, we have a lot of fun. It's a great social for the wives. I actually broke my ankle out in Manitoba back in December, so I was kind of laid up for most of this season. Not really having a chance to play, but I mean, it's always a good cause. We a lot of money's being raised, and I mean, we've had checks being presented out on the ice, you know, somewhere in a range of, you know, some are $750,000. I mean, we weren't the real reason for that, but they just kind of put everything around their fundraising to this Bruin alumni game to kind of cap it all off, and so it's good. I mean, you're out helping different causes, and we've got a great bunch of old Bruins that still like to play and enjoy it.
Yeah, and so are you probably now, Bobby Sweeney is still president of the alumni at the moment, or has that changed?
Actually, it's Rick Middleton now.
Ah, that's right, Rick, Nifty, yeah. The Nifty Bar.
Nifty Bars, and he's been probably the president for about 4 or 5 years. Yeah. Bob Sweeney stepped aside because he runs the Bruins Foundation.
Right.
So he's got himself pretty busy, but Swoop plays all the time. He's one of the regulars that gets out there, and it's all glory days, a little Bruce Springsteen going on sometimes, so it makes it fun.
Who's some of the guys that you like to be out there skating with? Do you like being out there with old teammate Terry O'Reilly or Nifty, or who?
Yeah, O'Reilly still plays. Middleton plays. Obviously Sweeney. I mean, we got Bruce Fewbottom, Kenny Linsman, and
yep.
We've probably got about 30, 35 guys that we can draw from on the roster. And what happens is Middleton basically sends a schedule out for the month, and you just kind of tell him, yeah, I can make this one, I can't make that one. So he's kind of the GM and decides who's gonna be playing in the different games. So, for me, again, it's really become a real social event for the Crowder family in the wintertime, and meeting up with good friends and, you know, an excuse to go to the rink and an excuse to probably have an adult beverage or two afterwards.
Talk to me. I mean, again, you're going to be out mingling with fans tomorrow night at Campanelli Stadium, having a chance. There are going to be folks who are going to remember you from your playing days. Maybe some who will remember you as a coach. Talk to me about having a chance to interact with folks who watched you as you skated for the Bruins before you went on to the Penguins.
Well, it's always, to me, it always seems very humbling because, fans in New England are fantastic and they never forget. And, sometimes you get talking to people and they're bringing up stuff that you forgot about. And for whatever reason, they remember.
Oh, yeah.
And it still kind of amazes me that probably 5 or 6 times a year, I guess just got one the other day, I get a letter in the mail where somebody's tracked me down and has a couple of my hockey cards and asking me to sign them and put them back in a self-addressed stamped envelope. So, fans are great. They're unique. I mean, they are what drive, any team, whether it's the Brockton Rocks or the Boston Bruins. I mean, they're the people behind you and they're the reasons you play.
Knowing that you came from an era, you had Jerry Cheevers was your coach. You had Wayne Cashman, who was your captain, and switching over to Terry O'Reilly. And knowing that the Lunch Pail Gang, the guys, you guys really, no problem rolling up the sleeves. Mike Milbury, guys who, no problem dropping the gloves. You look at today's product. Do you look at what it was like when you were skating and look at the product that's on the ice these days and say, that's different?
Well, I think the game is a lot different. I mean, back when I played, there was only 21 teams. Now they have 31 teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've made some real nice, I think, rule changes that have been able to enhance it. I still think fighting should be part of the game. I like the fact in the old days, I mean, you almost used to police yourself with different things. And but now these guys are making so much money and they're doing whatever they can with the head injuries and taking a lot of that out of the game and a hit from behind. And when we played and there was a hit from behind or you got kind of nailed a little bit going through the neutral zone, you come back to the bench with your head a little bit wobbly and a coach would tell you to keep your head up. I mean, nowadays, a guy who hits you, he's getting 3 or 4 game suspension.
Right.
So it was just a different era. I mean, I think, in all honesty, I think the players are a lot more skilled in this day and age. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster. We used to go to training camp to get in shape. These guys go to training camp in shape, and they're trying to win a job. And a lot of times the jobs, there's very few jobs to win in training camp just because of the salary cap. that they have out there now. Everybody's pretty much in place before the puck drops at training camp.
Well, and it's interesting to know that note that, you know, the day and age of the enforcer. I mean, I believe you skated with Lyndon Byers, who's probably one of the prolific enforcers back in the day. That's kind of a misnomer these days that you have, you know, somebody who's going to go out there and, hey, if you, it's me, I'm the team tough guy, I want you. You drop the gloves, you know, sticks banging on the boards, you know, and that could change the direction of the game depending on the outcome of the fight.
Yeah, I mean, this day and age, they can't have a one-dimensional hockey player. And if you were only an enforcer and you weren't really producing, or you're a guy that was, challenged actually at the game of hockey, there's no real room for you anymore. And I think the last person that I look back at is a guy like Sean Thornton, who played with the Bruins for a number of years, and he kind of had that role. But I mean, right now, there isn't somebody like that. I mean, if you went through the whole NHL playoffs, which I think is the most exciting hockey around, I think there was only maybe a handful of fights the whole playoffs. I mean, when we started a series against the Islanders or the Canadiens, there'd probably be six fights in the first game,
right?
Let alone the whole playoffs. But the whole mindset has changed. It's good to see it once in a while, it's just a different brand of hockey now.
So if we have any of the fans who are going to be going to the ballpark tomorrow night, anything you want to say to them in regards to, you know, going to come down, maybe with it, maybe they might have a Bruce Crowder jersey, maybe they might have a card or some, maybe they might have a program from a game that you were in from back in the early 80s. What would you say to them?
I'd just say, if you want me to sign it, I'll sign it. I mean, that's not an issue. I mean, I'm very humbled by that. Somebody would want that. So, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, you meet a lot of good people. Even when the Bruin alumni, and we get out there, I mean, and we usually do a big autograph session between the halftime. It's you see the kids, you see the dads, you see everybody, and if you can put a smile on somebody's face, it makes your day a lot better.
Knowing that you donned the Spoke B on your chest, how proud were you when they finally were able to lift the cup in 2011?
It was exciting. I mean, even the Bruins this year, I mean, I thought that was an exciting brand of hockey. And I probably watched more games than I had probably since 2011. But, they needed it. It's about time. They've had some great players there in 2011. And I think, you know, Sweeney's done a great job as a GM, Don, that, they've got a nice stable of young players. They got some old players. And it's going to be interesting how much he's going to dip in the free agent market to what he thinks needs to be brought into the team to improve them in the next season.
Well, the word is that Kovalchuk is talking about coming back over from the KHL. And Boston is one of those teams that might be they might be looking to replace Rick Nash, who's barely here for a song.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, I think the other thing that really happens too in this salary cap era is the ability to stay healthy, because your well isn't as full as maybe it was back when I played, where you could have a bunch of guys on contract and didn't have to worry about that. And they didn't pay us enough back then anyways to worry about a salary cap.
Right.
But it's going to be interesting, but they definitely have a tremendous nucleus of young players. And I mean, if you look like, I mean, I think Bergeron's one of my favorite players just to watch, and he does it all. And I mean, that's the type of player that I really respect, that no matter what the scenario is out on the ice, Cassidy can tap him on the shoulder and away he goes, and he knows he's going to be somebody he can count on. That's a real luxury for a coach when you have somebody of that talent.
Being an old school guy like yourself, listen, I love Brad Marchand, but if he tried pulling that back in the late 70s, early 80s, what would have happened?
Well, I mean, there would have been a brawl, to be honest. That's what I meant earlier when they said, I mean, back in our day, we used to police ourselves a little bit. I mean, Wayne Gretzky had his four or five guys that you weren't going to fool around with. I mean, Bruins were the same thing. I mean, you know, you had Stan Jonathan, you had O'Reilly.
Oh, sure.
You had Middlebury, Mike Middlebury, and you know, they kind of police themselves, and that's out of the game. And I don't have anything to do with this, but there's a great documentary on Netflix called Ice Guardians, and it's absolutely fabulous. I don't really pump things up too much, but I really loved it. It was all about these guys in the old days that were the Ice Guardians and took care of business and policed themselves. And one of the things they came out with that was that, you know, Wayne Gretzky never had one concussion in his whole career. And a guy like Sidney Crosby's had about six or seven.
Yep.
Because you just wouldn't take liberties with Wayne because you knew there was going to be consequences.
Yep.
And now that's not, you can't do that. You can't go out of your way because of the fines and all the other stuff that happens, that the players don't have that luxury to, you know, maybe police a Marchand in a situation that seems a little bizarre.
Well, Bruce, I want to thank you so much for joining us and at least giving a preview of tomorrow night's a baseball game as the Brockton Rocks are home. And I believe Brockton is going to be taking on the Navigators. So that's going to be a great game. Is it North Shore Navigators?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
So we're looking forward to that game. And if you have any memorabilia, especially if you get any Bruce Crowder memorabilia, bring it to the park with you. Bruce will be there as part of the Boston Bruin alumni being there tomorrow night. Bruce, again, thank you for being on the program.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kevin.
You got it. There he is.
Bye.
Boston Bruin. Bruce Crowder, he will be at Campanelli Stadium. And as Larry and I have teased, we are going to be at the stadium broadcasting live next Monday night. So stay tuned for details on that. What we'll do right now is we're going to step aside, and when we come back, WATD's Bob Parkus will be joining us. So you are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center. This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD. You are listening to Monday Night Talk. And our next guest is a gentleman that I've had on from time to time. You can possibly hear him in the mornings here on WATD during a special segment called The Good, The Bad.
Oh, every once in a while,
and
yeah.
Really, really interesting. Yeah, well, no, there's other names for it, but... But Mr. Bob Parkus is somebody who has been a staple in the Marshfield community for many, many moon.
Too many.
Too many. We don't want to.
I'm getting out of the business.
If we give you the number, it'll scare you. But from I love hearing his take on a lot of different things. He has an interesting, again, if you're somebody who's a rubber stamper and wants to hear what the same thing that everybody else is saying, well, then turn this off. But if you're somebody who wants to hear something different, somebody who wants to give you an honest-to-goodness opinion on something, then turn it up a little bit, because that's a good idea. We have Mr. Bob Parkus here joining us. Bob?
I almost turned the radio off because
you want to hear yourself?
I want to hear something that's the same. You know, I'm so tired of being different. But all right, I'm gonna start this off by asking you a question, and I have no expectation that you have the answer to this. Okay.
Okay.
None. Back in 1905,
1905.
1905.
Yeah.
There was a meeting in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, regarding the Russian and Japanese war over Korea. Now, I bring this up because, of course, everybody is talking about Korea and Trump and what's happening and what's going to happen, etc. Now, an American president actually won the Nobel Peace Prize by coming to a solution on what to do in Korea between the Russians and the Japanese. Who was that president?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't know that.
See you in high school, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't know that.
Teddy Roosevelt.
I was going to say Roosevelt.
But you didn't.
But I would have said
you should have.
I would have said the wrong Roosevelt.
Yeah, you got FDR,
I was
right?
Actually thinking it was the Roosevelt. It was the president prior to Roosevelt.
Well, it was Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy did a lot of good things.
And at the time, he said, and I am not making this up, he said, boy, he says, these Japanese, you got to hand it to them. He says, but I think in about 40 years, we'll be fighting a war with them over the Pacific. He really did say that, honestly.
Really?
He was off by 5 years. Can you imagine? So anyway, I want to talk about Korea because most people have, you know, a small understanding of where Korea is, number one, how many people live there, and when did it become North and South Korea? The Japanese conquered all of Korea. They got all of Korea. They made everybody speak Japanese. It was a colonial empire of theirs, and you may recall the Japanese lost World War II.
So they did.
They did.
They did.
So FDR died 1 month or so before the war in Europe ended, very sad. And Truman became president, knowing almost nothing. And the first conference that Truman had with the Russians, very important, Churchill, Stalin, and Truman met in a suburb of Berlin. The European war was over. This was around June. The war is over, and the question was, now what? So they're sitting there in Potsdam, and one of the questions that came up was, hey, we want the Russians to help us fight the Japanese. The Russians had not been fighting the Japanese, oddly enough. So the Russians said, well, okay, we will. And then we said, okay, now when the war is over, we, the United States of America, who we've been carrying the burden of this war, so we will accept the Japanese surrender in Korea. And the Russians say, wait just a darn minute. Our country actually borders Korea. There's a little slice of Russia that touches Korea. They say, so we will accept the surrender of the Japanese. And that's impasse. Now, a bright staffer happened to be there, and he wants to make a name for himself, and he came in with a National Geographic map, which had Korea on it, because he didn't know where Korea was, and he's looking at the map, and he sees that the 38th parallel goes right across Korea, right across the middle. He says, hey, look at this. So everybody decides, yep, the Russians will accept the Japanese surrender in the north, the Americans will accept the surrender in the south, so that's how you have North Korea and South Korea, no such thing. Because you know who wasn't there at this conference?
The Chinese?
Yeah, they weren't there, but more importantly, the Koreans weren't there. No such thing as North and South Korea. Artificial. So what happens next? What happens next is in 1950, the North Koreans invade South Korea. That's what we say. But in fact, other people say, no, the North Koreans did not invade South Korea. What the North Koreans did was try to reunite their country under force of arms. Whoa. They don't teach that in high school history class. Now, that may or may not be so. But what is a fact is that the North Koreans were pretty successful. The South Koreans weren't putting up much of a fight, and the American army retreated, that's the word for it, to the Pusan perimeter when Douglas MacArthur came up with this great idea. He says, what we'll do is an end run around the North Koreans. We'll land at Incheon Landing up there near Seoul, and we'll cut their lines of supply, and we'll win. So that's exactly what happened. Beautiful. So everybody could go home, right? Except that's not what happened. MacArthur then says, now we are going to advance all the way through North Korea to the Yalu River, the border between Korea and China, and we are going to take the whole shebang. Fabulous. Except the Chinese had said,
yeah,
don't you do that. Don't you do that. So there was a horrible, horrible war in North Korea where the American Army and Marine Corps lost 48,000 killed. 48,000 killed. For what? Okay? They call it the Forgotten War. For what? And to make it even more excruciating, because the war was going to be over so quickly, the American troops did not have winter boots. They had just regular leather boots.
Cold as hell there, too.
And the frostbite on the feet made it impossible you cannot get your feet warm in a foxhole when it's 40 below zero. All right. Well, that horrible thing happened. And while it was happening, Douglas MacArthur says, hey, I got a great idea. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to use nuclear weapons in North Korea, and we're going to lay devastation along the border between North Korea and China. The Chinese will never cross again. And in addition, I'm going to pay the Taiwanese under Chiang Kai-shek to be our army to fight the Chinese. Fabulous idea. Truman says, you want to drop nuclear weapons in Korea? Which way is the wind blowing? It's going to blow into Russia. It's going to blow into China. You're going to leave a devastation, radioactive wasteland. Are you kidding? MacArthur responds, there's no substitute for victory. And Truman responds, you're fired.
Right.
That happened to MacArthur. So here's the question. Why would an impoverished country of North Korea, actually experiencing famine, economic deprivation, why would they put their national treasure in a building nuclear weapons?
You obviously have an answer.
Well, who threatened them with nuclear weapons in the first place?
Don't know. Oh, well, the United States.
We did, right. So it seems to me to be a perfectly reasonable response. Everybody calls this guy a madman, but he must be pretty scared, wouldn't you think? I would think.
I thought it might have been just a terrific real estate deal that was pending for the North Koreans.
Well,
they were just trying to play cat and mouse with Donald Trump.
We're in modern times now.
Yeah, but
So... We left the past in the past. Now we're in modern times.
Okay, but that's what I thought we're talking about.
So what's the solution? Is the solution to insist that he give up his nuclear weapons? He's not going to do that.
No. So what's he going to do?
What's he going to do? We have to give up all the sanctions. We have to make North Korea just as wealthy as South Korea by trading with them. And there's precedent for this. And believe it or not, it goes back to World War II. Why did the Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor? Because we wouldn't sell them any oil, we wouldn't sell them any steel and iron and manufactured goods. And the Japanese looked at this and they said, wow, the Americans will not sell us any oil, the British won't sell us any oil, the Dutch won't sell us any oil, and there's all that oil in the Pacific right there. So guess what? We're going to take it, and we got to stop the Americans, so we'll sink them at Pearl Harbor. They hope to get the carriers. They flubbed up. They had no spies in Pearl Harbor. Because if they did, they would have known the carriers weren't there. So they made a huge, colossal mistake. Going to war for economic reasons is a huge error. Huge, gigantic. What should we do? We should make friends with the North Korea. Oh, you can't trust the commies. Oh, yeah? We trust them not to use their weapons. That's a pretty big trust. So I say, I'm not worried about England that has nuclear weapons. I'm not worried about Canada. They've got nuclear weapons. The Israelis got them. Pakistanis, the Indians, all these countries. By the way, South Korea, I'm sure, has them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worried about that because we're on good relationships with these people, trading relationships, and that's the way to go, and that's it. That's what I have to say.
So you're saying basically is if we could have, if there's a way to carry forth this goodwill, this little summit that just happened, that and we agreed to be good trading partners, that basically
Who cares?
That Kim Jong Un is going to be well behaved from here forward, because his behavior would say that he is. I mean, he's just as flighty as our president.
Sure. So, do you want to kill your customers? You want to annihilate your customers?
No.
No, you don't. Now, my neighbor has got a gun, right? Am I worried about that? Mm. No. I don't throw trash on his lawn.
So basically what you're equating to is you look at what happened with Japan and World War II, and you look at the Koreans. So you're saying, like, all these tests that they were doing with firing these weapons and all of this bluster that we were hearing from North Korea was basically similar to what we saw in World War II until we defeated the Japanese.
Well, yeah, I'm saying that. I'm also saying that there was something tragically wrong with the human race, because we know all this, and yet we continue to do it. When General Eisenhower came in to be president of the United States, there were 300 nuclear weapons. When he left, there were 30,000, believe it or not. And yet he was a wise man. But it's out of control, is what it is. And who is going to put control on it? Sayonara.
Here's my question to you, and again, we're speaking with the great Bob Parkus.
The great Bob Parkus. I was holding up the sign that said "Great Bob Parkus" right there.
I read it correctly then. Bob, who does so many things here, whether it's storytelling, whether it's to sit in with Mark Green on Sundays, you name it, Mark is here, does all kinds of. You also do Sharon McNamara now too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so you do everything.
I'm a world beater.
You're a world beater.
I am a shaker and a doer.
And that's just here. I can't tell you what else he does out in Marshfield.
I'm on TV tonight with Mark Green, as you mentioned.
Yeah, what's the name of the show?
Talk of the Town. What else would you call it?
Godzilla with a
$2 bill. Who's on the $2 bill?
Oh, Jefferson?
Yeah, pretty good. Hardly anyone knows that, right?
Yeah, well, it's because that's
Taxilla. Taxilla, watch out. He's voracious.
It's not... The $2 bill isn't heavily in circulation.
No, you can't get them.
So there's an old saying that history repeats itself.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because they say that those who do not know history are condemned to repeat it. But I say those who do know history are also condemned to repeat it.
So I'm going to ask you a final question before I let you go. And again, you are listening to Monday Night Talk. My question to you is, so you're seeing good things come from the summit. You feel that we're at the end of odds with North Korea.
They went to Henry Kissinger, the Nobel people, and they said, listen, if you can get the Americans out of Vietnam, we'll give you the Nobel Peace Prize. So we did, and they did. I say the same thing. I wish the Nobel people would get a hold of Trump. And maybe if they build a hotel in their capital up there and offer him the Peace Prize, if only he will get all the troops out of Korea. There's 30,000 there. There used to be 50,000, down to 30. Get them out of there. And by the way, NATO too.
So if I go back to your original conversation talking about the Korean War, so China and Russia have to be a little bit upset that Kim Jong-un is having these conversations with the Americans, knowing that the Americans could soon be right there on the 38th parallel.
Well, how about a little competition to buy North Korean products? Right? I mean, that would solve a lot of problems, wouldn't it? There's a famous photograph from satellite of North Korea and South Korea at night, and you can actually see the 38th parallel because South Korea is all ablaze with electric lights, things are humming. North Korea is dark as a dungeon.
But is this like a chess match? We know that we have an impending trade war, especially with China. We know that we're almost on the cusp of a trade war with the two countries that border us right now.
Tariffs are not the answer.
Tariffs are not the answer. Well,
no, better products are the
neither
answer.
Neither is NAFTA, though, is it?
Well, I don't know. It used to be that everybody wanted to buy American products. Oh, and by the way, you know what happened to United States Steel?
Please tell me.
They built modern plants in South Korea. That's right. I got to go.
There he is.
There
he was, the great Bob Parkus, who we have on from time to time as a guest. He has so much institutional knowledge, and he also had a lot of critical thinking on a lot of these different items, and that's why I like to have him on. Like I said, you hear him on in the morning just after the 7:30 news. I know sometimes we have our owner, our fearless leader, Ed Perry, who comes on. He likes to chat it up as well. But Bob usually will fill in. There's a lot of times that Bob will have a lot of information, whether it's something that he has researched, and he sits down and he puts forth that proverbial question to the audience, the morning audience, who's, you know, usually in transit, dropping the kids off, heading to work, getting a coffee, going to, you know, to the gym, you name it. But he usually sits down, and there's been, from time to time, he has asked questions. Did you know? And a lot of times I'm sitting there going, wow, that's usually a good question. And I usually use that as a springboard. If it's a good question like that, or if I see him passing in the halls after he's asked a question, said, hey, you know, I know you only get a couple of minutes in the morning. Would you like to sit down with me for a few minutes this evening and kind of expand that thought? And he's usually nice enough to come on in with me and sit down and put forth a thought like he just did as we sit here and talk a little bit about the recent summit between Kim Jong-un and our president, number 45, Donald Trump, as they met in Singapore. It was a brief meeting, but, you know, it's kumbaya at this particular moment. Of course, we'll see what kind of dividends that's going to pay down the road. Once again, you are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Just a quick note, remember, if you have ideas, if you have, you know, whether it's critical thoughts or suggestions or comments about the program, any particular segment, maybe a segment that you want to see on this show, you can reach me, MondayNightTalk@gmail.com. It is that simple. You also can find me on other social media platforms, whether it's Twitter, Kevin Tocci, that easy, T-O-C-C-I, or on Facebook. I do have a Facebook page. I also have a standalone page, Kevin Tocci. You can always like that. And Monday Night Talk has its own Facebook page as well that you can go to. It's Monday Night Talk on 959 WATD. If you've missed any of the segments that we've had on any time, you can go to our website, 959WATD.com. Scroll down on the homepage and click on the Monday Night Talk banner, which is on the left side of the page, and you'll be able to hear some of our latest podcasts. Usually, podcast entails the entire show. It's no longer. There was a time that I actually broke everything up into its own segment, every guest. But it's easier to add people going, I just put the whole show up. So I kind of taken that advice, and we put the whole show up for you to be able to hear it. And if you're somebody who walks around with a smartphone or smart device, you can get us on iTunes and load us into your podcast app and be able to listen to us anytime, anywhere, any place. So, all right, we're going to step aside, and when we come back, I promise you, more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tocci, on 95.9 WATD.
Hi, I'm Marissa Antosh from the Duxbury Free Library. On June 28th at 7 p.m., we welcome Robert Rivest for Rock This Library with Laughter at the Duxbury Performing Arts Center. Robert will teach ways to be mindful, connect with your environment, and bring laughter to everyday life. Free tickets to this event will be available starting June 14th at the Kingston Public Library and the Duxbury Free Library.
This is Sheriff Joe McDonald. Spring is finally here, but that also means a new round of telephone scammers looking to steal your money are back as well. Recently, these scammers have been calling local residents, pretending to be from the Sheriff's Department, local police, or even the Internal Revenue Service, with dire threats that someone is coming to arrest you. If you should be one of the unfortunate targets of these scams, there is only one thing you can do to make sure you're not a victim. Hang up. I promise no one from any law enforcement or government agency is calling to threaten you with arrest, looking for money, credit card, or personal information. Whether they ask for a few dollars or just personal facts and figures, there's a good chance someone is trying to take advantage of you. Don't fall for it. Always feel free to call the police if you have questions or want to report suspicious activity. This spring and always, I urge you not to fall victim to these badgering bandits. Instead, just hang up. Thank you.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for the final segment of Monday Night Talk, heard here on 95.9 WATD, the World Wide Web, 959WATD. Our final guest this evening is a no stranger to the program. I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. But this gentleman is an award-winning journalist, as he is an 11-time winner of the prestigious Wildlife Photographer of the Year competition, and he specializes in marine wildlife and underwater environments. And actually, he was here 2 years ago to talk about a series that he was doing. It's a three-part series called The Summer of Sharks. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, I give you our last guest of the evening, Mr. Brian Skerry. Brian, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much, Kevin. Great to be back.
I have to tell you first, before we get started, and just to let our audience members know, is that Brian is here to talk a little bit about a fantastic new book that he has for National Geographic Kids called The Ultimate Book of Sharks. And I have to say that I'm a little jealous because the 10-year-old inside of me wants one of these books. That's how fantastic this book is. Talk to us a little bit about putting this book together.
Well, thanks very much. And, yeah, the 10-year-old in me also enjoys this book. And I think, you know, it is a book that appeals to kids of all ages for that reason. It's a book that I did with National Geographic about my lifetime work with sharks. You know, I'm an underwater photographer. I photographed many different subjects over the years. But there has been something special about sharks that I've wanted to return to over and over again. And we had the idea to just put this sort of ultimate book together that features all kinds of great science facts and fun facts and interesting things about sharks. You know, there's over 500 species of sharks in the world. But it's also got a lot of personal stories of mine in there, you know, anecdotes of encounters, experiences I've had with sharks that I think will give young readers and anybody, really, some insight into what these animals are all about.
And this is on the bookshelves just in time for the 30th anniversary of Shark Week, which is actually coming up on July 22nd. What are some of the things, the little-known things that you could tease our audience about that we don't understand about sharks?
Well, it's a great question. You know, I think for most people, we only hear about sharks when there's a concern, when there's a public safety issue, or if somebody sees a shark off a beach or something like that. And I think we've developed, because of that and just because of media in general over the years, and I'm not even talking about recent movies and so forth, I'm talking about it goes back centuries, really. Popular culture has always portrayed shark as the villain. And we have this sort of shadowy, one-dimensional view of what a shark is. And the reality is, science is beginning to reveal that these are complex animals, that they have social structures, they have personality, that there are many different kinds of sharks, and they've evolved to have really amazing biologies and are perfect for whatever part of the ocean they happen to inhabit. And as predators, they play a vital role in keeping the ocean healthy, which is important to us because every other breath that a human being takes comes from the ocean. More than 50% of the oxygen everybody breathes, whether you're living in Boston or Nebraska or the Sahara Desert, comes from the ocean. So we need predators in the ocean like we do wolves or grizzly bears on land. And I think the more that we can understand sharks, we'll begin to see them as something magnificent and not just something to fear.
Well, I have to say, when you talk about the fear, instilling the fear about sharks, well, it was just 43 years ago, during the summer of 75, that the epic movie Jaws came out and probably scared the bejesus out of everybody, including myself, after seeing a movie like that, knowing that, you know, the way that the movie painted this animal, you couldn't go in the water. It was not safe to go into the water unless you were prepared.
Yeah, I actually love the movie Jaws. I was in the front row, or one of the front rows, in June of 1975 when that movie came out, and I love the script and the acting and the great detail that it told. But, you know, in reality, it did portray sharks as villains, and I got to know Peter Benchley quite well, actually, later in his life. He wrote the book and he wrote the screenplay for the movie, and he actually spent the rest of his life working to protect sharks and to do shark conservation. And although it was a great movie, it did a lot of harm. But we've learned so much since 1975 about these animals. And I eventually said later in his career that he couldn't have written that again. You know, knowing what he knows about sharks, he couldn't have done Jaws the way he did it. So I think it was great at the time, but we know a lot more today.
When you look through this book, and again, folks, as you're tuned in, and we're talking with Brian Skerry, we're talking about his new book, and I believe, is this your 10th or 11th book now?
Yeah, this is number 10.
This is number 10. As we talk about the ultimate book on sharks, and we're talking about the facts, but can I just say that the pictures are magnificent? Are these pictures that you've compiled over your career, or did you compile these strictly just for this book?
Oh, good question. No, these are pictures that I've compiled over my career.
Okay.
So I actually dived with my very first shark in the waters off Rhode Island in 1982. So, you know, over 30 years that I've been diving with sharks. And as you pointed out, a couple years ago, I did these three consecutive stories for National Geographic magazine about some of the top predatory species of sharks. And then I did another one last year about Mako sharks in National Geographic. And the idea was to give sharks a bit of a makeover, to show folks just how incredible these animals are, and to sort of shine a light on them, because, you know, we're killing more than 100 million sharks every year around the planet, mostly for their fins, for shark fin soup. And we can't continue to kill 100 million apex predators and expect the ocean to be healthy. So that was why I did those four stories. So a lot of the material in the book comes from those four stories, but it also goes back deeper over several decades.
I believe that you also, this book was done in conjunction with Elizabeth Carney and Sarah Wasner Flynn. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Two really great writers. And, you know, although I love to write and enjoy it, I really, you know, am a photographer primarily. So to do a book of this sort of size and magnitude, it required a village in some respects to put it all together. So we had some great help from those two terrific writers.
Now, how did you come up with the scary encounter? You have them throughout the book. How did you have like a list and you had to pare it down? How did you do it?
Well, yeah, you know, this was something that the editors at National Geographic Books sort of came up with. They really wanted to have a combination in this book of great science and pictures and facts, but they also wanted that sort of personal touch that I could bring, you know, with my experiences. So we looked at each chapter and tried to, you know, make sure that we had an applicable scary moment that was something that I could talk about on a chapter about, you know, specific types of sharks that just sort of fit with that chapter. So, you know, I've had just so many countless wonderful experiences with these animals that it was a matter of paring it down to the specific chapter so that it fit nicely.
Just so the folks who are listening at home, you know, you actually earlier on in our conversation talked about whenever there is a sighting, and here in Massachusetts we see them all up and down the coast, especially if there are seals out and about and sharks are feeding. What are some of the things that folks can do to be safe when it comes to sharks?
Well, it's a really good question. And, you know, as more people recreate in the ocean or more people on the planet, I think we will see more encounters where people are seeing sharks. And just having a little bit more information can make you much safer. So, you know, in a place like Cape Cod where there's white sharks now, where mm-hmm. we're seeing this emergence of white sharks, which is a really cool thing, actually, and I can talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, things that you can do is you can, obviously, you don't want to go in the water perhaps early in the morning when the light levels are low, or late in the day around dusk, because it's hard for a shark to sort of discern the difference between you maybe and a seal. And certainly you don't want to, as you pointed out, go
in a place where there are seals. If there's seals all hauling out or swimming around, naturally that wouldn't be the best place to be swimming necessarily. You want to, in Massachusetts, for example, you can get an app for your phone. There's an organization called the Atlantic White Shark Conservancy. They have sort of an update on shark presence. It's called the Sharktivity app. And on your phone, you could be on Nauset Beach or any place on Cape Cod and just know when they see a shark in any particular area, so you can sort of stay up to the minute on where these animals are. You know, going in where fishing is happening, if there's somebody, you know, fishing in the surf, and there might be the scent of fish that are being caught, that would be an attractant to sharks as well. So you want to be mindful of those kinds of things. Bathing suit color can sometimes make a difference. You know, science has proven that certain bright colors like yellow attract sharks. It's a high contrast thing, so they can discern that a little bit better, and therefore, you know, you might not want to have a bright yellow bathing suit, for example. So these are just some things. We talk about this in the book, and I think a little bit of common sense goes a long way in terms of being safe.
Again, we're speaking with the great Brian Skerry, a photojournalist who is someone who specializes in marine wildlife, underwater environments, and has been a contract photographer for the National Geographic magazine, talking about his new book, The Ultimate Books of Sharks. This is courtesy of the National Geographic Kids. What's it been like for you to be, I mean, this is your environment, and you just got done kind of describing how to be safe around, what's it been like for you to be around these creatures and try to quell your fears as you're trying to get the greatest stills of these creatures in their environment?
Well, you know, and it's a big part of what I'm trying to do is dispel myths about sharks. And contrary to popular belief, you know, when I go in the water looking for sharks, these animals are not all over me, or they're not instantly attracted to a human underwater. The truth is, it's usually just the opposite. It's very difficult to get close to sharks, which is what I need to do to make pictures. As an underwater photographer, I can't use a 600-millimeter lens. The water is never that clear. You just can't do things that way in underwater photography. So I need to get usually within 2 or 3 feet of an animal to make a picture of it. And although you would think with sharks that wouldn't be a problem, it actually is. They're not usually interested in me. And when you do have those wonderful close encounters, it's usually almost a profound experience. You just see these animals as something quite beautiful. Again, you know, you have to be mindful of the fact they are predators. This is not without risk. I don't want to give that illusion. But, you know, there are thousands of divers around the world diving with sharks probably every day, and it can be done safely. And I think, you know, that's the message. You can do things with sharks. You can get close to them in a way that you wouldn't do with terrestrial predators. You know, you wouldn't go to the Serengeti to photograph lions and get out of the Land Rover and put a stake on the ground and lay on your belly and go nose to nose with a lion. That would be crazy. But you can get nose to nose with a tiger shark in the Bahamas or a blue shark in New England. And, you know, it can be a very rewarding, safe experience. So I think that's part of the message. And for me, it's just been a wonderful subject to return to as a photographer.
And I actually like some of the little things that are built in here. Be a shark defender. What can you do to be able to protect this creature, the species itself? How much work went into making sure that you laid this out and that it was appropriate as you were trying to say, hey, you know, these creatures are more than just predators?
Yeah, well, that was a big part of the book for me. That was very important. I did another book, a coffee table photography book called Shark. It came out last year through National Geographic, and that was also a big reason for the book and for the work that I've been doing, is to sort of show the fact that these animals, although they're some of the biggest, baddest guys in the ocean, they are a fragile species, and they are in a lot of trouble. We're losing them faster than we can learn about them. And I really wanted folks to understand that. You know, I don't have any illusions that people will ever maybe feel the same way about a fish as they do a furry mammal in the forest. But I think if we can appreciate these animals for their magnificence, for all the evolutionary excellence that they have, all these sensory organs and things that they can do, we can respect them and maybe stop this sort of eradication that's been going on around our planet. So that's a big part of the book, and you know, I want people to see sharks in a new way and appreciate them, and hopefully, you know, care a little bit about their overall welfare.
Well, we just got a couple of moments left here, and I want to give you an opportunity to let folks know how they can find out more about the book, how they can get the book, and maybe if they want to follow you on social media and some of the things that you're working on.
Thanks. Yeah, so the book, The Ultimate Book of Sharks, is available everywhere books are sold. So you can go to your local bookseller in town or in the city that you live in, or you can buy it online. You know, Amazon, any of the online booksellers will have it. And, I have a presence on social media, so I post regularly on Instagram and Twitter and so forth. Instagram is probably my media of choice because it's a photo platform. So I'm actually working on a new whale story right now, a big whale story for National Geographic. So I'll be updating with material on there. So you can just follow me. Brian Scarry is the name and the handle on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. So, yeah, that's the best way to stay in touch with what I'm up to in the ocean.
And I will just say this, while this book is geared towards a smaller demographic, it's geared for kids. Myself, reading through it, I thought it was fantastic. So if you're somebody who's a fan of photography, of facts about creatures like sharks, then you know what? You don't have to be 9, 10, or 12 to get the book. That's just my personal opinion. It's a great read, and if it's something that you want to get for your kids, they definitely will learn a lot about, I mean, myself as someone who's over 50, there were some things I didn't know when I was thumbing through it and go, wow, this is fantastic information, which made for me to ask better questions because, again, my interest in what you put together here as a team with you, yourself, Elizabeth, and Sarah. So we thank you for the conversation here on Monday Night Talk once again, sir.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Really enjoyed it.
There he is, Mr. Brian Scarry, talking with us about his new book, The Ultimate Book of Sharks. And I'm telling you, I'm thumbing through this. I'm looking through this book, and just the pictures jump right off the page. And there's a lot to learn. You know, we think, many of us are aware of maybe a handful of different types of sharks, but there's so many other different ones that I'm looking at here, and I'm like, oh, I didn't even realize that they existed. And I didn't realize that there's such in-depth research that has been done for this particular book, other than adding the collection of pictures that Brian has been compiling since like 1998, some of the stuff that's been written in there about this particular creature. And as I joked with Brian early on, some of us who are a little bit older are still to this day a little bit hesitant to go too deep into the water because of movies like a movie like Jaws. That was so surreal, you know what I mean? When you watched it as a kid back then, it was like, oh my God. You know, today's day and age of social media, a lot of stuff's dispelled, and it's really, really different. So, again, if you're somebody who is into stuff like this, you know, this is a great book for, especially for your kids, to get them some knowledge about it, and even provide information, little-known information, about these creatures, their habits, the misnomers, you know, the things that we have always been taught to believe about sharks. Some of the things that you can find in here that, you know, what their diets are. A lot of times we believe that they're looking for a human being, whether it's to grab a limb or just to chomp at a swimmer or a surfer. That's not necessarily the case, but I don't want to give too much more of the book away. If you have a chance, it's on shelves in bookstores everywhere. I'm sure you also can find it online if you have a chance. You will not be disappointed, especially if you're a fan of the ocean and sharks. You'll love this book. Your kids will love this book, most importantly. Well, unfortunately, that is all the time that we have this evening. We hope that you enjoyed this segment of Monday Night. We hope you enjoyed the whole program, to be truthful. And we will come back next week at 6:15 p.m. to do this all over again. Up next, of course, Stan Blackmer and the gang of South Shore Live. Stay tuned for them. You are listening to 95.9 WATD in Marshfield. Have a good night.
The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.